we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
Underworld in panic as cops penetrate a secret criminal chat network. New EvilQuest ransomware targets Mac OS X users. BMW to make built-in car features into paid subscriptions. And Tim O'Reilly says venture capital is doing more harm than good. Hey everybody, Mark Jeftovic here with another edition of the Access of Easy Weekly Digest. This is issue number 153. We are recording this again on the Monday afternoon. It's July 6, 2020. So the show notes for this week's edition are going to be at accessofeasy.com/153. So last week's quote, you know, I kind of knew no one was going to get this one, but here we are. It is, what is essential to develop the will to see things, to see how human beings are manipulated, to see where there might be impulses by which people are manipulated. That was Rudolf Steiner, the inventor of the Waldorf schools, among many other things. And like I said, nobody got it. I would have been surprised, but you never know. You guys surprise me from time to time. This week's quote, I bet you somebody will get it, is, the most basic question is not what is best, but who shall decide what is best. And if I can give you a hint, his birthday is the same day as mine. Anyhow, you know the rules. No searching up the answer, and you have to be the first person to post the correct source of the quote to the show notes on the blog. Remember, scroll down to the bottom of the edition and leave it in the comments field. And I believe I said the show notes URL. I'll say it again. accessofeasy.com/153. First person to get it right gets their next web hosting or domain renewal on us. So, the criminal underworld is in a panic as cops penetrate the secret criminal chat app, EncroChat. So, I mused privately. I was looking for a link where I wrote this. I couldn't find it. That I thought, this whole thing about new TLDs over the past several years in the naming space, I thought there's an incentive for criminals to create entire private TLDs that are not in the ICANN-sponsored route. They're not visible to the world at large by design. And I don't know if that's ever happened, but we do know now that there are cases of criminal networks creating their own chat and communications networks. The incentives are there, and it would be more surprising to me if they didn't do this. So the latest case is that the police have managed to penetrate such a chat network, and it's sent shockwaves throughout the criminal underworld as the police infiltrated EncroChat and have been making hundreds of arrests as a result. It all started when the French police figured out that some of EncroChat servers were located in France, and they deployed a, quote, technical device, end quote. I don't really know what they meant by that, but it cracked the system, probably some sort of Ethernet sniffer or network scanner or something like that. But anyway, from there, they and numerous other European police agencies began monitoring the communications of many criminals for months while they coordinated and planned crimes ranging from drug trafficking, money laundering, and even murder. So now they've started moving on all these crooks, over 700 cases in the UK alone, over 100 in the Netherlands. According to Dutch law enforcement, the operation has, quote, given insight in an unprecedented large number of serious crimes, including large international drug shipments and drug labs, murders, thrashing, robberies, extortions, robberies, grave assaults, and hostage takings. International drug and money laundering corridors have become crystal clear, end quote. Looks like this network was a combination of both the chat system and hardware phones that included a panic wipe feature and a proprietary operating system called EncroChat OS. There was even a website advertising a showroom in Amsterdam, and the website, of course, is gone, but I linked to a screen grab of it or an archive of it on archive.org. And Jesse Hirsch also wrote about this in his MetaViews this week, and we link to that in the show notes page as well. New EvilQuest ransomware targets Mac OS X users. Security researchers have found a new type of ransomware targeting Mac OS X users. It's called EvilQuest. It's also known as OSX.ThiefQuest. In addition to encrypting your files and extorting a ransom from you, it also installs a keylogger and a reverse shell. And it gives, so that gives the attackers full control over your machine even after you pay up the ransom. It also scours your device for any cryptocurrency wallets and steals that too. So it looks to be distributed via bootleg software on cracked software forums. Some of the programs it's been found in are Little Snitch, Ableton, and cracked copies of macOS itself. So don't use bootlegged software if you didn't need any more incentive. BMW to make built-in car features into paid subscriptions. This one reminded me of a short story or a book by Philip K. Dick called Ubik. And Philip K. Dick is the guy who wrote Blade Runner. Well, the book he wrote was Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And that was made into the movie Blade Runner. Anyway, in Ubik, his other another book that he wrote, we see our characters in a near-future cyberpunk setting, and every innocuous activity requires the user to pay a small fee. Now, at the time he wrote it, it was a coin-operated fee, from opening your apartment door to get in and out to even running your morning coffee maker in your own kitchen. And that's what I thought of when I read this article on how BMW wants to start making features that we ordinarily associate as coming with the car, like heated seats and cruise control and built-in massagers. They want to make that available on a subscription basis. It's not entirely worked out how it's going to be structured, but suffice it to say that, quote, the automaker would offer select driver assistance and comfort features in exchange for a recurring fee. All of the features the automaker wants to monetize would already be built into the car when you buy it, and you would pay for them through the company's connected drive store, end quote. BMW says this gives their customers more financial flexibility. I think it gives them a new revenue stream. And the reason I'm posting this here, I thought it was relevant to what we cover in Access of Easy. I think this is part of a new trend away from ownership and toward subscription. I first came across this idea reading Amory Lovin's book called Natural Capitalism. And I liked the idea at first. I still do like the idea in certain contexts because it does align the interests of creating products that stand the test of time. It sort of flips the incentive on its head, so you're no longer incentivized to build in obsolescence. But I'm wary because this idea taken to extremes can lead to excessive financialization and even the erosion of property rights, especially in this day and age when you have these take it or leave it end user agreements and you don't really have a lot of power to negotiate the terms of engagement. So it's something to keep an eye on. Australian government retreats from mandatory contact tracing app. So over the last couple issues, we've covered the state of government contact tracing initiatives around the world. And more than once, I've talked about Australia, that the installing the government contact tracing app would be voluntary unless less than 40% of the population volunteered, in which case it would become mandatory. So a reader in Australia has emailed me to point out that it's true that was the original plan, but they backed away from that plan almost immediately. So the mandatory part is off the table. It was fairly quickly that the Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison came out and said it wouldn't happen. It was actually the day after the country's deputy medical officer floated the idea of compelling Australians to install it. So I stand corrected. Thanks for the update. I do encourage all of you to send me your updates and corrections and even story ideas, because I may not have time to respond to every single email I get, but I do read them all, so thank you. iOS clipboard snooping more widespread than TikTok. Actually, let me pause for 1 second and going back to, if you're going to email me a story idea or a correction, it also helps if you tell me if you want to keep your name in it or out of it, because I like to give a hat tip to people when they give me story ideas, but some people don't want their name mentioned. So if you tell me in the original submission or email to me, then it saves me going back and forth with you via email to find out if you want to keep your name private or not. Anyhow, iOS clipboard snooping more widespread than TikTok. Last week, we reported on how TikTok was grabbing data from the iOS clipboard, and the company, you know, said it was some kind of anti-spam measure, which I think is kind of BS, and that they would cease the activity. They were also caught doing this a year ago, and they said they would cease the activity, and they kept doing it anyway. So now a report in Ars Technica found that the practice is not just limited to TikTok. They found 36 other apps that all do the same thing, which means everything from passwords to personal data to Bitcoin addresses, anything you copy and paste between any apps, not just the ones that engage in this practice, is vulnerable to clipboard snooping. All of this is coming to light because early access to iOS 14, which comes out this fall, it contains an additional transparency feature that alerts the user when an app is attempting to access your device clipboard. You know how your iPhone will say this app wants to access your photo, your camera roll, or your microphone? Starting with iOS 14, it's going to start doing the same thing about your app clipboard, your data clipboard, and it turns out a lot of apps are already snooping that. Reddit bans the Donald and Chapo Trap House and 2,000 other subreddits. So as part of the protests around the murder of George Floyd, a lot of subreddits voluntarily went dark for a day to protest the platform's inaction around hate speech. And the company committed to update their policies and act on them, which they've now done. In a post to the company blog, Reddit CEO Steve Huffman announced new rules that explicitly ban subreddits that promote hate content based on identity or vulnerability, and he tightened up rules around subreddits that interfere with other communities. Read, subreddits that incessantly post to other subreddits. Then they banned approximately 2,000 subreddits. Vast majority of which were inactive, but approximately 10% of them did have activity, and two of them were quite large, and we're talking the Donald, which was absolutely huge, pro-Trump MAGA Reddit, and the far-left Chapo Trap House. Not as big as the Donald, but also pretty big. So, obviously, neither community's mods have read my book, counseling those who wish to protect their audiences and content from the moral judgments of others to use social media platforms primarily to build up your own membership bases within your own infrastructure under your own domains. And as you may know, the ebook version of my book, Unassailable, is now free, has been for a while. The URL is in the show notes page, so before you build up a huge Twitter following or Facebook audience or a gigantic subreddit, read my book, build up your own mailing list first before somebody else takes your community away from you. Tim O'Reilly says venture capital is doing more harm than good. So anybody who's been following my writing over the years, they know my thinking around venture capital, how I think it incentivizes financialization over sustainability, and that the ripple effects of that go beyond the cool kid startups and adversely impact Main Street and everybody else who isn't a hedge fund or a private equity fund or an investment banker. So in an interview last week, Tim O'Reilly made a case that venture capital is starting to do more harm than good, outlining, quote, why venture capital in its current iteration has begun to make less sense for more founders who genuinely want to build sustainable businesses. The way he sees it, the venture industry no longer is focused on finding small companies that might one day change the world, but more on creating financial instruments for the wealthy, and that shift has real consequences. End quote. So if I were to take issue with anything that he said there, it would be the word starting to part. I think it's been this way since the dot-com bubble, and it became more markedly so in the aftermath of the global financial crisis. And you would think policymakers would have learned their lesson by now, but given the response to the coronavirus financial panic, it's clear that they don't know how to do anything else other than double down, print more money, and create more perverse incentives. So I write about this a lot on outofthecave.io, including my own blueprint for how to build sustainable companies. It's called the Transition Overview, Building Companies That Matter. And also, you know, Charles Hugh Smith writes about this every single day on his blog of2minds.com. And we also syndicate Of Two Minds out through accessofeasy.com. And, you know, there's a reason I call it venture capital. This is nothing new. And I'm glad luminaries like Tim O'Reilly are finally beginning to speak up about it. But, you know, what took you so long? Case study shows removing third-party tracking actually increased revenues. So Johnny Ryan over at Brave, the folks behind the Brave browser, put out a note last week looking at the case of the Dutch national broadcaster NPO. Since they were a state-owned enterprise, they were facing additional constraints around data tracking pursuant to Dutch privacy laws and the GDPR, I presume. So they removed all third-party trackers from their website, and a strange thing happened. Their website revenues increased. January and February saw significant bumps of 61 and 76% respectively. And then once all the pandemic stuff hit, the numbers still went up, not as much, but they still went up over month to month previous year, plus 18% in March, plus 8% in April, and plus 19% in May. So in this case, Ryan's speculating that the revenue lift comes from, quote, from the reduced ad tech tax and prevention of commodification and arbitrage of NPO's audience, end quote. And the latter is something he's written about at length, and I'm linking to that note as well. I do like the kind of stuff that Johnny Ryan from Brave.com has been putting out. It's a good mailing list to be on, and they really do cover this whole ad tech ecosystem from the point of view of privacy quite well. Okay, Behave browser plugin protects you from web-based scans and attacks. I came across this browser extension called Behave, and it warns you if a website is using embedded scripts to port scan you or try to access an internal or private IP within your network. This might not be the result of an unscrupulous website operator, although it very well could be. It might also indicate that the site's been hacked and hostile scripts have been inserted into its source code. As it stands now, you can download the source from GitHub, and there are also installable plugins available for Firefox and Chrome. I've installed them both so far, no alerts. Update on the EasyDNS Fold at Home team. It's been a few weeks since I checked on this, and I was pretty surprised when I checked in on the EasyDNS Fold at Home stats. Remember, that's a distributed computing project that harnesses the power of spare CPU cycles to conduct molecular folding calculations for use in genome and disease research, such as cancer and, of course, now COVID-19. So I was pleasantly surprised to see that Team EasyDNS has cracked the top 500 out of roughly a quarter million teams, with 14 contributors clocking up more than 1 million work units, and we have 34 total contributors. Here are the contributors bringing in over 1 million units. Brewjack, Jonathan Jusik, GDF, Tim F, Zero Derivative, Henri Ala Pajari, Bill Pai, Blitherman, OPN, JP Martin 6, DL/LD, Actas and John, I know who you are, Phyllis Alardis, and Mike 905. Thanks to you guys, thanks to everybody on the EasyDNS team, and thanks for everyone contributing to the Fold at Home project. You can learn more about that. You can download clients for all of your architectures. You can join the EasyDNS team, which is 248458, at the Fold at Home website. Finally, the Access of Easy Salon 11, Revolutions, Power Plays, and Authoritative Reality. So this week on the Access of Easy Salon, Jesse Hirsch, Charles Hugh Smith, and myself kept coming back over the course of the show on three recurring themes. One, have we entered a climate where a French Revolution-style megapolitical shift is looming? Two, the pesky phenomena of the old coup within a coup, a.k.a. the power play as per the 1978 Peter O'Toole political thriller of that same name. That's when we talk about, you know, what happens if this is the end of the age of the nation state? Wouldn't it suck if what takes its place is Google and Facebook? And finally, the third theme was the difference between objective reality that everybody thinks exists and authoritative reality, which for all intents and purposes is what actually matters. It was another interesting one. Check it out on the show notes page, accessofeasy.com/153. So that's it for another week, and stay healthy, stay safe, stay sane, and happy 4th of July to all of our American friends, happy Canada Day to all of our Canuck friends, and we will see you next week.
Bangladesh, rhymes with your fresh, you're just a whore.